Need a reason to smile? Comfort Dental has you covered with new patient exams, including x-rays, for just $19. That's right, only $19 to get started on a healthier, brighter smile. With convenient locations, flexible hours, including evenings and Saturdays, and a team that truly cares, Comfort Dental makes dental care easy and affordable. No gimmicks, no stress, just quality care when you need it. Get comfortable with Comfort Dental. Call or visit ComfortDental.com today.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
We're going to run through the papers in a few minutes' time. Craig Hughes, political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, is with me. Much of the emphasis, of course, still on the war in the Gulf and the effects, as in fuel prices, that are impacting us here. But we want to go to Israel, first of all, because we are joined on the line by Irish Times contributor based in Israel, Mark Weiss. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, first of all, the news overnight is that two Israeli cities have been hit, much to the surprise of the residents, it would appear, because I presume there's an assumption that the protective dome is going to protect all cities in Israel.
That's partially true. Israel has probably the best anti-missile defense systems in the world. But it's not 100% secure. It's about 92% secure statistically. That means if 15 ballistic missiles are fired from Iran on average each day, which is more or less the case at the moment, one or two will get through. And the one or two that got through last night were particularly devastating. The one that landed in Arad destroyed entire apartment blocks. 115 people were injured, 10 of them seriously, including young children.
And the surprise that was experienced by the people in those cities, I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu overnight described it as a very difficult evening for Israel. Those critics of Israel would say, well, this is what people in Lebanon, in Beirut, this is what people in Tehran and other cities around Iran have been experiencing, missiles coming from the skies and destroying apartment blocks.
And that's undoubtedly true. It's a two-way street. In Israel, there is better protection than in Iran and Lebanon. There is a very sophisticated alarm system. People get warnings on their phone of incoming missiles when they are launched from Iran and Lebanon. And then if the incoming projectile is not intercepted, there will be sirens sounded. So in that sense, Israel is much better protected than its neighbors, but still, as I said, the impact can be devastating. As we speak, there are incoming rockets on the southern port of Eilat. And this morning, three rockets hit the Tel Aviv area, causing, again, devastation, destruction to three separate impact sites there.
Now, the problem with this kind of tit-for-tat exchange of ordnance is that you don't know where it's going to lead. For example, the Iranians have been saying the reason they targeted those areas in Israel was because that's where nuclear research facilities are located. This after their own nuclear enrichment site at Natanz was targeted by the Israelis. And they're saying, okay, if you're going after that kind of facility, we will go after similar in Israel. And there are huge dangers involved when you've got nuclear material.
Yes, I think it was a pretty fair, accurate guess that Iran would at some stage in this war target Israel's nuclear reactor in Dimona. It appears that the incoming projectiles last night were aimed certainly at the Dimona area and other energy infrastructures in Israel were hit last week, the oil refineries in Haifa. But it's very much a case of Russian roulette. You don't know when or what the target will be. Most Israelis are delighted if they can get a full night's sleep without the sirens going off and without having to go to the safe rooms and bomb shelters. And everyone here now, since the war started, basically, plans their whole day around the most important thing, which is being always, at any given time, close to a bomb shelter. And that will continue, I presume, until the war ends.
Now, what is being made of Donald Trump's threat to Iran that the Americans and I presume the Israelis will destroy all of their power generation plants? I mean, on the face of it, to deprive the civilian population of electricity would appear, on the face of it, as I say, to be a war crime. I know the Russians have been doing similar in Ukraine, but that kind of thing is supposed to be outlawed under international law, that you don't go after, for example, desalination plants, you don't go after hospitals, you don't go after electricity power plants.
Well, Donald Trump, in his statement, said this was a threat in order to force the Iranians to reopen to all shipping, all international shipping, the Strait of Hormuz. You could look at it as potential exit ramp from the war, because just before that, Donald Trump said that he is considering winding down the operation. However, it will be difficult for him to end the war without at least giving the impression of victory. And for that to take place, I think Donald Trump needs two things. He needs the Strait of Hormuz opened, and he needs the enriched uranium, 440 grams enriched uranium, not to be any more in Iranian hands. So you could interpret this as potentially leverage for an exit strategy.
One of the reasons, I suppose, that this war happened was ostensibly, well, one was regime change, and that kind of was put on the back burner for a while. We don't know where that's going to go. But the primary thing was that Iran could develop a nuclear device, according to some sources, a week, a month, a year, 10 years, whatever it might be. But when the talks were ongoing, and Witkoff and Jared Kushner were involved in these talks, and it was thought they were going, they were making real progress, and they left that meeting and they thought there was a deal to be made with the Iranians, and then Israel and the United States attacked Iran. So the question is, and I don't know whether it's being reported in Israel, the suggestion from the British, for example, that Witkoff and Kushner are in effect working for the Israelis.
Well, certainly, I know from here, from the Israeli perspective, and also from the American perspective, if you listen to what Witkoff and Kushner said afterwards, the impression certainly was not that those talks with Iran were heading in the right direction. The impression was that they were totally stalled. The Iranians were playing for time. And it's because of that, it's because they perceived the Iranians were not engaged in those negotiations with a serious aim of coming to a solution, that the US decided to attack.
And they said Israel attacked first, and they attacked because they knew Israel was going to attack first if they didn't attack. It's all a bit confusing. The threat to the United Kingdom, for example, which the Israelis are saying, you know, these missiles, they can reach Diego Garcia 4,000 kilometers away. They can certainly reach the UK. What do you make of that?
Well, it was proof, in a way, yesterday, that the contention by the Americans and the Israelis that not only are Middle East countries at threat from the Iranian missile capacity, but in the whole of Europe. Some of the opponents of the war poo-pooed this idea and said there was no proof that Iran had ballistic missiles that could reach that far. Well, the proof came yesterday with the launch at targets in the Indian Ocean, which is would put the entire Western Europe in Iranian missile range. So that is now a fact. Whether, of course, the Iranians would ever consider launching missiles at European targets is another question. But considering they believe that the UK and other European powers are certainly allied with the US in this war, then it's certainly a possibility.
Now, you mentioned Trump looking for an off-ramp. I presume Israel would want to keep him in the field of battle for as long as possible until Israel's objectives have been achieved. They don't want Trump to find an early off-ramp, do they?
From Israel's perspective, I think there are military achievements every single day. The more Israel hits the nuclear and the rocket and the military capabilities of Iran, then that's more military successes for Israel and would make it harder for, if the regime survives, to in the future once again become a military threat to Israel, and in the future for it to supply its proxies around the region, particularly Hezbollah in Lebanon. So Israel does have an interest in maintaining the war, but I think it's clear that the minute Donald Trump makes the decision, then the war with Iran is over from Israel's perspective as well. The Lebanese front is a separate issue. We could have a situation that Trump decides to end the war against Iran, and Israel will follow suit. Israel will not pursue a war with Iran after the Americans pull out. But the fighting in Lebanon is a separate issue. There may be a situation where the fighting in Lebanon continues, even though the war in Iran is over.
Mark, thank you very much for joining us. Mark Weiss is an Irish Times contributor based in Israel. Craig Hughes, political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, is with me to have a skim through the Sunday papers. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, what's dominating the headlines?
I think the issue dominating everyone's mind at the moment is how is the government going to help people at the pumps and help them in their pockets as a result of the major cost implications they're seeing arising from the war. So, you know, our paper, the Mail, or my sister paper, the Mail on Sunday, today reporting that we can expect a 5 billion euro package when the cabinet signs off on it on Tuesday. And that's kind of discussed broadly across the paper as well. I mean, and just to touch on that, really, what people can expect, it's pretty clear there will be significant cut to excise duty on fuel mm-hmm. and home heating oil. Likely to be an enhancement of the fuel allowance.
Your paper also suggests there might be rationing.
Yes, indeed. And perhaps people being advised to work from home, which I think is sensible in the short term, given the constraints on supply there as well. And it's having a knock, this war is having a knock-on effect across society as well. In terms of Sunday Independent reporting that some builders won't take on long-term contracts.
You run a music festival and you're trying to get quotes at the moment.
Yes, so I'm one of the organisers of the Night and Day Music Festival in Lochie Forest Park the last weekend of May. And I mean, we find it difficult trying to, for example, get quotes for buses or other logistical costs because people are saying, look,
we don't know what our own cost base is going to be.
Exactly, which again creates challenges for us in the sense because, you know.
In your sister paper, The Mail, they say, thank God we have a budget surplus. Mm. This is what the Taoiseach said. Yeah. This is the rainy day we've been saving for.
Yes, and interesting point on this, Pat, is that at the same time, we look at the Sunday Independent, right, and talking about cutting inheritance tax, and we've also previously been told that they'll look to cut income tax. So at a time when we're now going to be using our rainy day fund, we're also talking about narrowing the tax base, which I think there's quite a contradiction in that. And particularly on the inheritance tax side of things, I was looking at the amount of people who actually pay the inheritance tax in 2023. Only about 13,000 people paid inheritance tax. And now we're talking about changing what is a very equitable tax to appease a very small number of already very wealthy people. So I think there's a real contradiction there for the government.
I think one of the problems is the price of housing has gone up so much, and often the inheritance is a house. And, you know, people have to flog the house to pay the tax.
But at the same point, why should the tax system be changing to benefit a really small minority of the population who already have means?
Now, still, business goes on as usual. The state is about to spend €500,000, according to the Sunday Independent, planting trees to offset the emissions that will be generated by the Ryder Cup.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the government is always struggling to, or always trying to come up with initiatives to meet their emissions. We know we've been slacking for quite some time on hitting these targets. And this is one of the quirky stories that came out of it. I think it was also World Tree Day recently enough as well. My colleagues in Creelche were happy to tell me about that. And the Ryder Cup is going to be a really, really big deal to showcase Ireland. So I think it's perhaps important for brand Ireland to be able to show that they're willing, able to offset some of the climate emissions arising from it.
Big American investment company Baring is going to come into the Irish housing market with the $1 billion fund. That's across the Business Post. And what that's going to do to prices when you've got those kind of deep pockets trying to bid each other. Metrolink is in the indo as well. There's a story about how many houses they're going to have to buy.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of controversy, of course, around this when initially when we saw the homes being bought in Ranelagh in Dartmouth Square, but the head of the Metro at the time was actually defended the measure by saying, look, we're going to buy these homes, but we're going to be able to sell them after the project is completed. So it seemed like a no-brainer from that instance. And yeah, the Sunday Report.
Well, it's going to take so long. Those houses they buy today are going to be worth a hell of a lot more by the time Metrolink is finished.
Exactly. Sure. And I'm wondering, you know, what will be doing with those homes in the interim? How will they
Builders will live in them, I suspect, you know, because they've got to live somewhere if you're going to bring people in. Now, does the Gerry Adams case make much in the newspapers today?
And there is some writing across it. My colleague John Lee was wondering in his column today that what will Gerry Adams' funeral look like when it comes? Will he get the funeral of someone who was
A member of the IRA
in active service, exactly, or not?
Volleys shot over the coffin, etc. Yeah. A bit dark of John to embark on that kind of speculation.
Well, look, it's a topic that was in the news all week, and I think the court case itself though was quite spurious and quite thin, in the sense that there was no real new evidence brought forward. And just for your listeners to know, this is three victims of IRA bombings spanning from 1973 to 1996 brought this case, seeking, you know, I guess nominal damages of £1. And I suppose that the theory behind it was that this, if they were successful, they could have tied Gerry Adams up in legal cases for quite some time to come.
More people suing him on the basis that he was the leader of the IRA at a certain period.
Yes, it was quite important. So 2 years ago, excuse me, 2 years ago, a separate judge awarded a cost protection order against the claimants, meaning that if they'd been unsuccessful, they wouldn't have been liable for Mr. Adams' costs. However, they withdrew their case last week because the judge actually raised the issue. Excuse me, the judge raised the issue of abuse of process. So if the case had been then thrown out in that regard, they then could have been liable for the cost. So they agreed to withdraw their case and both sides paid their own costs. But I really think that this unless there's any new evidence that people can bring to the table, I don't think you'll be seeing similar cases like this being taken against Mr. Adams.
All right. Anything else spring to mind from the papers? Dublin Airport, the terminal, you know, it's very crowded on a very busy holiday weekend, but I mean, they've got to lift the passenger cap, but is there room for the passengers?
Yeah, look, I think this has been an ongoing issue, dogging Dublin Air for quite some time, the issue with the passenger cap. We're told they're going to finally bulldoze it out of the way and then plan for an expansion after that. I think elsewhere in the papers, though, I think the inheritance tax one really is interesting for me because it's kind of showing, you know, this is Fine Gael raised this during the election. They want to extend the threshold from 400,000 tax-free to a child to 500,000. Now, back in the Celtic Tiger 2009, it was up almost at 545,000. But it's interesting now that both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are trying to introduce this as a policy that they're looking to introduce at the same time while other families are kind of struggling out there. So it shows that they're focusing on their kind of a narrower middle class base.
Craig Hughes, political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, thank you very much for joining us in the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.